The Guardian.
This week on The Guardian Audio Edition, Luke Harding reports from Mali as the French army retake territory from jihadist forces. Peter Bradshaw gives 5 stars to Steven Spielberg's film, Lincoln. And in this week's audiobook review, we discover the world of Jane Austen's most beloved character, Elizabeth Bennet. To subscribe for free, go to audible.co.uk/guardianaudio or find us on SoundCloud, Audioboo and in iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Hello and welcome to the ongoing decadent party, otherwise known as the Guardian Film Show. It's a veritable buffet of alcohol, cocaine, steroid abuse and manual relief in a custom-built car. Though happily, we're just watching from the sidelines. We won't actually be taking part. Running wild on this week's show, Matthias Schoenaerts is locked and loaded in the Belgian drama Bullhead. Bill Murray plays a lusty Franklin Delano Roosevelt in Hyde Park on Hudson. And celebrity culture goes under the microscope, courtesy of Brandon Cronenberg's Antiviral. But the first film off the runway is Flight, a tale of high-wired heroics, starring Denzel Washington as an alcoholic pilot who performs a daredevil rescue while under the influence. The Guardian's Catherine Shord went down to meet Denzel and the film's director, Robert Zemeckis.
Oxygen check. Checks. You want
hit? No, thank you, sir.
Sure?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
What does it have to say about our ability to save ourselves?
Well, that's obviously that's the underlying theme. And of course, I guess the film says it's not so easy. I mean, it's quite a journey and quite a struggle. Yet it's something we have to do.
This is SouthJet 227. We're in an uncontrolled dive. We got a jam stabilizer or something.
Oh, Lord, we're coming out of 7,000. I see nothing but acid.
When I say I want you to retract the flaps, retract the gear, trim us nose down, okay?
Trim down? What are you going to do?
Margaret,
yeah.
When I tell you I want you to push these forward, full throttle, can you do that?
Yeah. Okay,
when I tell
you... Wait, sir, what are we doing? Why would I trim down?
We're going to roll it.
Do you think acting is at all like addiction? I was thinking about how, a whip has to constantly lie and he has to constantly convince other people to buy into his storytelling.
It's not a lie so much with acting because when you go to the movie, you know it's not real anyway. So lying is deceiving someone and a film doesn't deceive per se unless that's what it's about. I mean, the audience, you get your popcorn and you know Superman really can't fly, you know, but... Touché. I'm so sorry. I ruined that for you.
Father
he
Christmas.
Can. He can fly. He can fly. He can fly.
Margaret, power! Gear up.
Gear up!
Joining me now is film's editor Catherine Shord and The Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw. Catherine, I guess it's a mark of a great actor if you take a duff film and make it seem like a masterpiece. Is that the case here?
Ooh, I think that's a little bit harsh. Although it is a film entirely propelled by one man's amazing performance. And not just performance, but actually just his charisma. He's just so incredibly cool. There's a lot of problems with the film, but my goodness, what a performance. And what strikes me as strange about this film is it's like The Master. It's sort of an alcoholic guy stumbling towards redemption. And there's a lot of sort of God things going on.
Did you see it as a religious film, Peter?
Well, it's very religiose. It has all. It ventures into a sort of M. Night Shyamalan territory, rather worryingly sometimes. It is a terrifically enjoyable film, and it's not just about Denzel Washington. It's about the way in which that airline, that central scene, the crisis, is put together just terrifically well.
Oh, yeah,
well.
That central
absolutely
moment with
brilliant.
The plane crash
the
is brilliant.
The plane moment, that is
Shades of Castaway, Zemeckis' last live-action film, which had a similar moment.
Yeah, absolutely great. And Robert Zemeckis, it's showing you that, you know, that it takes a certain kind of skill to put together a very entertaining, feel-good, old-school Hollywood movie, and that's what he does. You can't be too hoity-toity about the craftsmanship involved in doing that. it's a little bit of an absurd film. I found it very enjoyable while I was watching it, even with Kelly Reilly's bits, which is where it frankly sags. But at the end of it, I thought, what on earth was that about? I mean, what I assumed it was based on a true life story. It's not. It's completely made up. It's based on, as I understand it, one extraordinary detail that emerged from a real air disaster that if your flight controls are locked and you're in an apparently fatal free fall heading to the ground, in theory, you can level the plane out and put it into a glide with one terrifying manoeuvre. And I won't say any more than that. But that's all that it's based around.
I thought its attitude towards addiction was fascinating for a mainstream Hollywood film. There is the implication that for those moments, he couldn't have achieved what he did if he hadn't been high on coke and booze.
Yeah, with a little tweak, this film could be a great kind of a great advert. Campaigning. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. But that's the thing, is that Washington's performance is so kind of complicated and deft and you're magnetic. So you read a lot of stuff into it, which the filmmakers are perhaps trying to back away from, because you can't possibly, in a Robert Zemeckis film, be suggesting this sort of thing.
It's a good thing, no.
but the film undeniably does.
And that is the interesting thing about the film, is that it's not his fault. Not only is it not his fault,
well, no.
But maybe if he wasn't, absolutely. It didn't have the zing of that coke, he wouldn't have had the balls to try doing what he did.
Yeah.
And that is a very interesting subject, which Zemeckis, I think, rather backs away from the much more challenging implication of the film. But it's very silly, but it's very watchable.
I've known you 11 years, Whip.
Right.
You want to tell me that you and Trina went to dinner and you had two glasses of wine?
No,
sounds like a nice restaurant. Now, which one was it?
You have to say that. It was an ordinary day, Margaret. I mean, it was an ordinary day. You know me. I was in shape to fly. And, you have a problem saying that?
Denzel Washington, high as a kite in flight. Our next film, thank heavens, keeps its feet firmly on the ground, trudging the muddy fields and forecourts of rural Belgium. Although, wouldn't you know it, there's trouble there as well.
Bullhead, by debut director Michael R. Roskam, is a brooding social realist horror story played out in the wintry landscape of Flanders, where the cattle have been pumped full of illegal growth hormones. Matthias Schoenaerts plays the baleful local enforcer, nursing an old injury and surely pointed towards disaster.
Peter, Matthias Schoenaerts attracted a lot of great reviews for his role in Jacques Audiard's Rust and Bone last year, but he's just as good in this, isn't he?
I think he is just as good. I think he's absolutely terrific. I think the film is absolutely fascinating. It's not quite as a positive and likable a character as Rust and Bone. Rust and Bone, he showed that he's not just a tough guy, he can be sensitive as well, and that's what made the film and made his performance so kind of attractive. Here, it's much darker. And Bullhead kind of had me gripped. I felt that it was a new genre, kind of Belgian gothic, yeah. Belgian gangster gothic. I mean, I can't think
rustic
of
rustic noir.
Rustic noir, like Bruno Dumont's Flandre, and another movie called Calvaire was like that. Against in the Badlands of Belgium, where you don't quite know where you are, almost. It's like kind of geographically and culturally very remote, like Louisiana or something. Very, very gripping stuff. And Matthias Schoenaerts' performance, really kind of disturbing and powerful.
Catherine, is that a selling point for you, that it's showing a part of the world that we don't really see on screen?
I think so. And I mean, actually, we're sort of vaguely sort of feel we're familiar with it from, say, the Dardenne brothers films. Mm. But it's a much more, it reminded me of anything, of things like The Long Good Friday, with the sort of strange car parks and the gulls and the blokes in horrible jackets and the basic kind of stupidity of a lot of the people as well, but not in a comedy way, in really just quite a grotty, muddy way. I thought it was wonderful. I mean, it really is gripping, and all the people around are fantastic. The kids are incredible. Maybe they breed them like that over there, because in the Dardenne brothers films, you've got great kids.
Yeah. But as I say, entirely without the Dardenne sort of high-mindedness, it's very, very dark. It really is. And the idea of this guy, this bullhead Jackie, who we see in the very first scene being a horrible bully, a kind of terrifying bully, and you think, what a nasty piece of work. And, of course, that's what he is. But then, brilliantly, the film unfolds and unfolds, and you realise there's a very particular reason for him involved in the testosterone business.
Yes, it starts out that you think you know exactly where it's going, but it's basically a deconstruction of macho brutality, isn't it?
Yes, and that brilliantly deferred flashback scene, I just wasn't expecting. 20 years ago, now what's going on? Weirdly, it reminded me a little bit of the flashback scenes in Haneke's Hidden, you know, the farmyard scene of something very horrible has happened to some kid here. And we're seeing it at a distance. We don't quite understand what's happened. And time and space have lent disenchantment to the view. It's a very well-made film. It's terrifically good.
Any problems with it? Did you think it... I worried that it got a little bit kind of overblown and operatic towards the end.
A little long. A little, you know, could have done with a few more ladies, maybe. It wasn't really chick flick. But I guess not every film can be.
Brutish behaviour in the very fine Bullhead. Now, finally, there's some good news for all those people thinking, why can't they make more films like that King's Speech? Perhaps even showing what the King got up to next. Well, it turns out they have.
No King of England had ever visited America before.
So nice of you to come.
Mr. Pitt,
forgive me for not getting up.
So Franklin invited them here, to the country, where we could all relax.
In June 1939, the King and Queen of England visited Franklin Delano Roosevelt at his country retreat in upstate New York, and the special relationship was forged at a hot dog picnic. This is the backdrop for Hyde Park on Hudson, a tale of the president's bed romantics and front porch diplomacy. It stars Bill Murray, Olivia Colman, and Laura Linney.
She's obviously his mistress. Look over there.
The secretary.
They'll see us.
Rev.
I am.
Catherine, rarely was Oscar bait more perfectly prepared.
That's a little unfair, I think, because actually, and I've been unfair in this as well, because I implied in an earlier review that they were dragging themselves along by the coattails of King's Speech, whereas in fact this was in production before and a happy straight.
I bet it didn't help with it. It's probably speeded up the production a little.
It might have. I think it's been a mixed blessing for them, because actually, you know, this was sort of, you know, a few months ago one did sort of have quite high hopes of this for as an Oscar contender. I think it's strange, you know, thinking about it in relation to something like Flight, which is entirely driven by this great charismatic performance. Something about Bill Murray's performance in this kind of... It's a sort of slightly hollow centre. Mm. He's great, he's charismatic, but he's not here.
I worried that he was miscast. I've always seen him more as LBJ. I think he'd make a great LBJ, but FDR, he didn't quite convince me.
That's interesting. I was really looking forward to this because I thought the idea of Bill Murray as Roosevelt was very interesting. But the thing about Bill Murray is that when he's great, he's really great, but sometimes he just phones it in, and I'm afraid that's sort of what he was doing here. I mean, he looked the part, he carried it off, but I got the impression his mind was sort of on something else all the time. And that's a weird thing that only Bill Murray can do, and that's what you get with the great man.
He does have one fascinating scene early on, though.
Well, he does, and if only the movie had been all about that kind of thing. The problem with the movie is it's split between the royal visit, his relationship with the royals, and his relationship with his mousy, sensitive, distant cousin, Daisy, played by Laura Linney. And there's a very, very interesting, difficult, painful scene where she has to be sort of intimate with him in a car. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, she's like an abuse victim. You know, he's like really taking advantage of his office, surely. You know, this is Monica Lewinsky stuff, isn't it? But then the movie just goes into kind of nostalgia, sentimentality mode, entirely unearned. And everything about it just seems half asleep. It's a movie you just wanted to slap around the face and say, wake up, you know, you look like you're kind of torpid.
It's directed by Roger Michell, a British filmmaker, but he's tackling mainly an American story. But I wondered if he had the affinity for it. There's a lot of play of the kind of cultured clash between the visiting royals and the hot dog eating Yanks. And yet it didn't seem that he was in touch with that material at all, really.
I don't know. I mean, I think Roger Michell's made a lot of films in America, hasn't he? He's sort of a fairly international kind of play. And actually, I think this was shot, confusingly, in Britain, wasn't
it? Chilterns.
Yeah, which you can sort of see. Mm. I don't know. I think what made that material not quite come alive is that it wasn't nasty enough. It was interesting when it was nasty, and it was interesting, as you say, when Daisy and FDR's relationship is kind of kinky and strange and gets to the nub of it. Whereas, you know, when it sort of... that never kind of came to anything. It never kind of exploded in the way you hoped it would.
I don't think the problem was with the direction at all. I think it was just the material. I think it was the screenplay. It just needed work. They needed to decide, what is this movie about? What is this film about? And I never got a clear answer to that question. Although, as Catherine says, there are interesting, sharp moments, especially when Queen Elizabeth, played very well played by Olivia Colman, says, you know, these people don't like us. Listen to their surnames. They're Italians, Jewish. You know, my goodness, that's quite, you know, considering what we know about Elizabeth's apparent sympathy for appeasement, she comes across as a sour meanie, much nastier, interestingly, than Helena Bonham Carter's version in The King's Speech. And weirdly, I got the impression, wow, I wonder, however disconcerting this film is, it has flashes of what I felt was sort of verisimilitude. I bet you that she was closer to that than in the much more sucrose version in Tom Hooper's film. But it didn't, I don't know, it didn't add up to very much.
You were wonderful tonight, young man.
What do you mean?
Just what I said. You were graceful. You were confident. You're going to be a very fine king.
I don't know what to say.
Your father would be very proud.
I'm not so certain about that.
If I were your father, I'd be proud.
A fond farewell to Hyde Park on Hudson. We're moving on now to the last film on the show. It's Antiviral, directed by Brandon Cronenberg.
Do you not agree that the mania surrounding celebrity is reaching an unhealthy level?
No, I don't. My clients want to feel more connected to those people that they see in the magazines and on television.
Brandon, son of David Cronenberg, proves he's a chip off the old block with this modern-day vampire story about a bespoke clinic that sells celebrity viruses and a meat market that peddles celebrity skin. It's a film of gleaming white surfaces that will soon be smeared with blood.
Bleeding.
Peter, I worried that Brandon Cronenberg had caught his dad's virus on this film.
Oh yeah, I mean the ironies are just irresistible. This is an interesting movie in some ways. I've sat down and watched it twice, and each time I've marvelled at the formidable focus and consistency that Brandon Cronenberg brings to it. But each time I was sort of defeated by the message, which is sort of celebrity culture, don't you hate it? I'm thinking, wow, when is somebody going to make a movie about celebrity culture being so great? Because at the moment, you know, whenever you see a film attacking celebrity culture, performed by actors, who of course are yearning to be famous, something about you wants to throw up your hands and say, well, yes, really. It's very yucky, it's horrible, it has the courage of its convictions. You can't watch it without that skin-crawling sense of sort of body horror and hypodermic needle horror that he brings to it with his dad's early work, obviously foremost in his mind. And it is well acted, it's well put over. But at the end of the day, I was just defeated by it. I just thought, so what? I don't buy it. So what? You know, I'm not that interested in celebrity culture as a subject, really. I mean, we all say, you know, we are more and more obsessed with celebrity culture. I'm not sure that we are. I mean, we were obsessed with celebrity culture back in the 20s and 30s as well. I have to say, it's a bit of a no from me, but I'm certainly fascinated to see what he's going to go on and do next.
Catherine, did this strike you as a film for our times?
Oh, yeah, I suppose. I mean,
in the worst possible way.
I mean, and it, you know, it's sort of tickling in a sort of, you know, muted way. But it felt like a short film that was miles too long. And it had the sort of gleam of a commercial. It felt incredibly well funded for a first film, and which is, you know, it may well be just fair enough. But I don't know. It felt very studenty on some level. I thought, you know, it felt like a sort of short story that somebody had written when they were 17.
Peter, we're saying that it's heavily indebted to his father, David Cronenberg's early work, which was groundbreaking at the time. The whole body horror culture of the 1970s almost came out of a historical reality and deep cultural concerns about man-made cancers and artificial insemination and things like that.
Yes.
Here, it suddenly feels a bit dated.
It does feel dated. It feels very regressive, almost. I felt that it was being applied to something which I didn't buy it. I didn't buy the moral imperative behind it at all. It seemed very forced to me. And, you know, especially as we've all lived through David Cronenberg evolving away from all those things. I mean, the fascinating thing about Cronenberg is that he's evolved away from those early body horror concerns, and yet there are strands of it still in his creative DNA. And to be suddenly confronted with what looks, as Catherine rightly says, looks like a student film, which takes us back to square one, is a bit disconcerting.
I don't understand how this isn't considered cannibalism.
The body horror of Antiviral, bringing this week's show to a sickly conclusion. My thanks to Catherine Short and Peter Bradshaw, and we'd like to point out that all of the activities discussed and depicted on this week's show may well have an adverse effect on your health. So eat right, stay fit, and we'll see you again next week.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, Luke Harding reports from Mali as the French army retake territory from jihadist forces. Peter Bradshaw gives 5 stars to Steven Spielberg's film, Lincoln. And in this week's audiobook review, we discover the world of Jane Austen's most beloved character, Elizabeth Bennet. To subscribe for free, go to audible.co.uk/guardianaudio or find us on SoundCloud, Audioboo and in iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.